This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Last month, the Daily Tar Heel, the student newspaper at UNC Chapel Hill, requested records of sexual assaults on campus. The university denied the request. A number of media organizations, including WUNC, supported that records request. The newspaper now says the next step could be to sue the school to obtain this information. UNC has made substantial changes to its sexual assault policy since 2011, following a number of high-profile sexual assaults at the school. Christy Hurt is the Assistant Vice Chancellor and Chief of Staff for Student Affairs at UNC Chapel Hill. She's the former chair of Title IX Task Force and is working to increase resources and improve procedures for assault survivors on campus. Christy Hurt, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Also joining the conversation is Andrea Pino. She's the co-author of We Believe You, Survivors of Campus Sexual Assault Speak Out, and the co-founder of End Rape on Campus, a group that works to end sexual violence on campuses around the country. Andrea is a UNC Chapel Hill alum and a sexual assault survivor. Andrea, welcome back to this program.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to talk to you about this decision. UNC Chapel Hill denied the request for public records. The media organizations wanted to see who has committed sexual assaults, what's the process for reporting them, and what happened to those individuals and how those cases were treated. Now, the university says they had to consider the well-being of campus community, survivors, the anonymity of survivors, as well as those who were implicated. What do you think of the decision?
To be honest with you, I've genuinely been in support of FOIA requests, in particular when it comes to aggregate data. I do think it's very important for the public to know how many students are found responsible for sexual violence at universities and what is the resulting punishment from the decision of the adjudication board. Where I do agree with the university is I'm not pro the releasing of the names of those who have been found responsible or not responsible, because the reality is that not many survivors choose to report to begin with, and even fewer choose to actually go through the adjudication procedure. So it would be identifying, and not so much the perpetrator, but the person who has come forward, whom, you know, if they haven't come forward now, why would they want to come forward at a later time, especially if it's against their will? So I think the disclaimer, though, is it is very important for us to know what is happening on university campuses. So I do implore the Daily Tar Heel, as well as other news outlets, to look at, you know, wanting to request aggregate data rather than identifying information.
Well, Christy Hurt, what do you think about this information? How important is it that we all know at least the aggregate data to see what's happened and how things have changed on the campus?
Well, I think it's incredibly important that we know. And we have disclosed aggregate data for the first year post this policy's release. Since the renovation of the Title IX and equal opportunity policy broadly, we did ask in the task force process that the university be really transparent about the implications and impacts of the policy. And part of that commitment was to release the aggregate data that Andrea has described so beautifully. We want to make sure that the community does know what we're hearing and what we're seeing from our student population and, quite frankly, from our faculty and staff as well. And that transparency is super important for us in all regards, including building trust and faith that our process is working or figuring out where it's not. And so that aggregate information is available right now for that last fiscal year, and we'll be working on the subsequent years to come.
Well, Andrea, you have been outspoken in your case about the ways in which it did not work for you in 2012. You were a student at UNC Chapel Hill. You were sexually assaulted by another student, and you've been very open about that experience. Can you tell us how that case, or how you believe that case was handled by the university at the time?
Yeah, so I'd be one of those people where I to have gone through the process that I would be shocked if it would be released. And actually, I did not go through UNC's process. Were I to have gone through that process, I likely would have been caught in between the phasing out of the honor court procedure and the new kind of the in-between procedure before the policy that Christy had described. The reason I did not choose to go forward was because I hadn't heard very good things from other students. And like Christy said, it's very important to be transparent if these policies are working or not. And I know that one of the major concerns, which Christy herself shared back when the policy committee had come together, is implementation. Implementation is very difficult, especially when UNC's had a lot of turnaround when it comes to high-level administrators. And every time UNC gets a new class of students, you have a new class of students that has to be educated. And the reality is that most students don't know about these policies. They don't know if it's worth going forward. And that's why it's so important to have aggregate data. data, like how many students are actually coming forward, how many students are actually being found responsible. And unfortunately, it's not really high around the country. Many students are not found responsible. There's much more of a likelihood of being expelled if you're found responsible for academic misconduct than sexual misconduct. And that was a big reason why I didn't come forward. It's because after doing so much research, I chose to come forward with my personal story, but I didn't choose to really go through the adjudication because I didn't feel like it would really work out in my favor.
Tell us why you didn't think. What was it about what you understood about the process that made you think it wasn't going to work out?
Well, you know, when you speak to dozens of survivors who have not really had very good experiences, whose perpetrators are still on campus or have graduated and they have not, you know, there's a big deterrence for coming forward. And really, that's the reality for sexual assault survivors all around the world, not just those on campuses. I mean, the fact that you're much more likely to be prosecuted for a low drug offense than you are for sexual violence, really anywhere, especially if you happen to be a wealthy white male at a college university. I mean, I think the Brock Turner case is a perfect example of the reality of sexual assault on campus. And that is what I felt back then. I felt that if I came forward to the university or if I went forward to the police, that I likely wouldn't be believed. And that's not the fault so much of the university, but more of the system. The fact that the system at the time really wasn't catered to supporting survivors.
So, Christy, you were the chair of the Title IX Task Force and the liaison between UNC Student Affairs and the Title IX Task Force. I'm sure you heard that as task force members. That was one of the things most likely that you were considering. How did you take that information in, and has anything changed as a result of the sense that, at least back then, it wasn't going to go anywhere?
Well, absolutely. I think that Andrea's story and stories of other survivors who were working with her was seminal to our process. And without their bravery, I don't think this task force would have happened. And it certainly wouldn't have allowed us to revamp the whole system the way we have. So there's a lot of bravery out there in front of us that gave us the space to work. And quite honestly, all of those stories and the feedback that we heard from our campus community in a variety of forums really was the center of our work. And so hearing that survivors didn't feel like they would get the resources that they needed when they came forward was one of our top priorities, setting aside even adjudication for a minute. We know that not everybody wants to hold their offender accountable because that's its own sort of set of complications. But folks want to come forward and be heard. They want to be supported. They want access to resources. They want academic accommodations. They want support where their housing will be. There are all these sets of things that we could center in our process that was taking care of people. And we put that in the middle of all of our work. And the task force took that very seriously and heard from students how they could make then the process more transparent, simpler to use, more easier to get information about around adjudication.
Walk us through the process. What happens when a sexual assault victim decides to go forward?
Well, it depends on what you mean by going forward. And this is one of those complications. So a survivor comes in, somebody comes in and says that something has happened to them and they want help. There are a host of opportunities for them to get help. So sometimes people come to us with a narrow question, like, I have experienced a recent trauma and I can't take my finals. Can you help me? What do I do? And then we work and provide academic relief in some regard to help them move their finals to a different date or find the quiet space to take the exam or whatever it might be. So we meet the person where they are with their emergent need.
May I interrupt you there and ask you, who is we at this point?
Oh, that's a very good question. And so there is an Equal Opportunity and Compliance Office on campus that houses our Title IX response group. And the Title IX team has two report and response coordinators who serve as the facilitators or sort of case managers for folks who come in to identify what those needs are and then help direct them accordingly.
And how would you, if I had been assaulted, how would I know to go there?
We have done a lot of work on campus, and it's probably not enough, to make sure that folks are aware of the resources that exist. And so we've done campaigns. We have sent all campus emails. Everybody's required to take a level of training through an online module to make people aware of these resources. So we try to saturate through our housing environment, through our campus environment as much as we can, and there's always more work to do in that regard.
So I'd come there with my question. This might be the clearinghouse, and then you'd make a decision about where to go. This is let me ask you this, what Title IX has to do with it? What's the connection between Title IX and sexual assault in the university?
Absolutely. And so a lot of folks come to this question with, you know, sexual assault's a crime. Why is the university involved at all? And the university is involved because sexual violence is also a civil rights discrimination issue in terms of Title IX being part of an educational amendment that goes way back to 1972 that says people cannot be treated differently in their educational environments based on their gender. And over 40-some-odd years of Title IX development and implementation, that's come to be interpreted as if folks are being sexually assaulted on campus, then they are not being treated fairly through a civil rights lens, and we step into the space to create remedies and do prevention work in that regard. It's separate from the criminal justice process, but can be pursued at the same time as a criminal case, or folks can choose to participate in one or the other or neither.
And if you decide to pursue this as a criminal case, where do you go? Is this campus police? Is this Orange County, the Chapel Hill police who takes care of
it? It depends on the jurisdiction where the assault happened. And our Department of Public Safety on campus is a sworn law enforcement agency, just like the Chapel Hill Police Department is. Their jurisdiction is on campus property. So if an assault happened on campus property, the Department of Public Safety would take up the banner in terms of the investigation. But if it happened on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill's jurisdiction, Chapel Hill PD would be involved. And they also do work together.
All right, but here's one of the question that has come up in a recent case. You know, a couple of months ago, Delaney Robinson, a student at UNC Chapel Hill, said she was sexually assaulted. And I know you can't talk about the case, but one of her complaints at the moment is that when she went to Chapel Hill police with the complaint, it was dismissed summarily and never went forward. And the issue that it raises is, can the Chapel Hill police, who ultimately answered to the chancellor, is that really where the first place I should go with a criminal? With a criminal complaint?
Well, so it depends again on where the assault happens. And the Department of Public Safety is a law enforcement agency, just like Chapel Hill is. And so, yes, if a crime happens on campus, it needs to go through the Department of Public Safety and then up to the Orange County District Attorney, just like it would in Chapel Hill. And so that's not something that we have control over in this space. You know, the Title IX space is, yet again, very separate from the criminal space. And so I think that that's a whole jurisdictional issue with a different can of worms.
Andrea Pino, let me ask you, you know, we've already opened up a number of avenues here. There's civil and criminal and a number of avenues through the university and a civil process to go through. Is this part, I mean, it sounds like resources and making things available to an assault victim. On the other hand, it also seems to add a layer of complexity. And I wonder if that makes things worse.
You know, I do think that one of the things that survivors that I've spoken to often say is that it does become very overwhelming when there are so many options. And there's kind of, especially being raised as a woman, there's this kind of pressure. You know, you were raised to think that this would never happen to you if you did the right thing. So now what do? Who do you turn to? Who's out there looking for you? And, you know, I do want to, you know, congratulate Christy for all the great work that she's done, not just in her current position, but what she did back when she was the director of the Women's Center. And I think one of the best things that UNC has done is hire Cassidy Johnson. Although her position is different at UNC, it's kind of been seen in the field as being a confidential advisor. And that's something that is actually one of the main tenets of the bill that I'm working on now with New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill. And from what I've heard of Cassidy Johnson has been that she has really helped streamline these resources for a lot of students, because when you don't know what to do, you know, who are you going to talk to? I don't want to trigger an investigation. I'm terrified of going to the police. You know, a person like a confidential advisor can be that guide through both the criminal justice system and the university system and helping you see what the pros and cons are of both systems. So I do think having a person like that does make the process at least a little bit easier, because you do have someone that's guiding you. But I do want to also point out that the rape laws in North Carolina are some of the worst in the country. First degree rape and second degree rape are only categorized as penile vaginal penetration. So a lot of people do not count in this statute. Oftentimes they're charged with sex offenses, which although they can yield to as much punishment as first degree and second degree rape, depending on the severity, you know, there is that hindrance. There is a hindrance that the law literally says that you might not count if you're male. You might not count if you're assaulted by a person of the same gender, or you might not count if you're anally raped. And that is unfortunately a reality for a lot of survivors. Is there's a lot working against them, unfortunately, in both systems.
Well, I want to take a look at that question more closely. But Christy, I want to go back to Cassidy Johnston. What is her position?
Her job is the gender violence services coordinator on campus, and there's a second one now named Holly. So there are two of them in this role, and they are confidential support people in our system, meaning that you can go and talk to either of those folks, and no other action has to happen unless you drive it. And that is a very important spot for our folks to come forward when they're trying to assess out from the sidelines, who should I tell next? What would be the impact of me telling that person? Cassidy and Holly and people in that role can help them with that process.
Are those positions that grew out of the task force and its findings?
Yes and no. It was certainly something that the task force wanted to see happen, but actually was in the pipeline just ahead of the task force because we've been working to identify who could fill that role and what would it look like prior to the task force actually taking it on.
So Andrea also raised this question about North Carolina state law regarding rape and sexual assault, and then what do universities do? And is there anything in this civil process that make that could be more robust than even state law?
That's actually the tremendous opportunity that we have here. And what we actually did do in our process was make our definitions of sexual assault gender neutral and much more broad. And so we do scoop up this space that state law doesn't cover so that students who might not see a remedy available to them, at least in an obvious way through state law, could seek a remedy at the university level because we've made those regulations and those policies much more broad and accessible for a variety of different kinds of behaviors.
Andrea, in 2013, you filed a Title IX complaint with the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights. Following your experience on UNC, the complaint is still under investigation. What do you take away from what you've been through in this whole process that you're going through still?
You know, to be honest with you, my complaint and what's going to happen to it is actually a very big concern that not just I have, but other advocates have. I mean, what is going to happen to existing complaints in this issue around Title IX? Because this administration has done so much more with Title IX than any other administration before it. And truthfully, I'm very happy with the work that UNC has done in terms of, you know, creating this public task force that simply hadn't existed before. And that was actually one of our biggest concerns. It was that the policy, the interim policy right after the end of the honor court had been done so in a very non-transparent way. It was not very robust. And that was one of the things that, you know, Christy Hurt ran with. It was making the policy as open and transparent as possible. And there were some incredible people that were on that task force and that held other people accountable. And I think the university grew out of that. I do think that my concern, which has been my concern since the beginning, is deterrence. You know, are we seeing an increase in deterrence for sexual violence? And unfortunately, sexual violence is likely always going to happen. It's not really going to go away. But I am a little concerned with what will happen in the incoming presidential administration, because the Obama administration and the existing Department of Education has created some deterrence for universities, which I don't know if it'll exist in the coming years. I don't know what that's going to look like for students who are coming to campus. And if the process is not working inside the university, who's out there fighting for them outside of that and who is pushing for accountability? And I don't know what that will look like if university students will not have an option to file a complaint like I did.
Christy, what do you think is the next move for UNC in terms of sexual assault prevention and accountability? Where do you go from here?
And so we're currently reviewing the impact of our policy. So we know that the proof is in the pudding and that after we renovated this policy, our work was not done. And the task force built in a part of our policy that committed us to evaluating the success or failures of the policy. And so we're doing that now. And I anticipate making recommendations about how to continue to improve our work in the response lens shortly. With the prevention work, I've always said we've had miles to go before we sleep. And so I think we have a lot of work to do in the prevention realm. I think that we need to look at deterrence, as Andrea said. And while our bystander intervention programs that train people about how to intervene in problematic situations, is tremendous, it needs to be scaled up so more folks can have access to it.
Andrea, what do you think has to happen nationally at the college level to improve things across the country?
I think that we need to move away from a culture of awareness and more towards a culture of accountability. And that's been something that Annie and I in particular have been talking about as we go to universities, that there are some really great bystander programs and awareness programs. But I think in particular, women in marginalized communities are very aware of sexual violence, in particular students of color. Trans students are very aware of the violence that they're at risk at. But I don't see this kind of climate of accountability. I don't see it coming from students, and I don't see it coming from a lot of university administrators. So I do think that we need to really create a climate in which sexual assault is not tolerated. And if you do it, you do not deserve a Carolina degree. And that is something that, you know, was instilled in me when I first went to Carolina for orientation in 2009. And I wish was a bigger conversation when it came to sexual violence. And I think, unfortunately, you still see students, especially at UNC, talking about Eve Carson. You see students talking about, you know, what it means to be a Tar Heel. But I think we just don't hear enough about, you know, resisting sexual violence, resisting rape culture, resisting racism, Islamophobia, and homophobia. We don't see enough of that that's not coming from these students who are already marginalized. So I would like to see this bigger community outreach. I think especially in the incoming 4 years, we're going to need that accountability coming from the UNC community.
Andrea Pino is co-author of We Believe You, Survivors of Campus Sexual Assault Speak Out, co-founder of End Rape on Campus, and a UNC Chapel Hill alumna, sexual assault survivor as well. Andrea, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Christy Hurt, Assistant Vice Chancellor and Chief of Staff for Student Affairs at UNC Chapel Hill. Thank you, Christy.
Thank you.
Just ahead, we're going to take a look at another aspect of Carolina. NCAA and UNC Chapel Hill seem to be at loggerheads over an ongoing investigation into academic fraud at the university. We'll talk about that on the state of things. Do stay tuned.